യോഗേന ചിത്തസ്യ പദേന വാചാം മലം ശരീരസ്യ ച വൈദികേന യോപാകരോത്തം പർവരം മുനീനാം പതഞ്ജലിം പ്രാഞ്ജലിരാനതോസ്മി സ്തുവേ പതഞ്ജലിം വ്യാസം ശങ്കരം ച മുനിത്രയം കർത്തൃസൂത്രസ്യ ഭാഷ്യസ്യ ക്രമാത് വിവരണസ്യ ച. സോ for during the last few sessions we were dealing with these three kinds of mental transformations called parinama. At one particular stage of yoga practice, our mind itself evolves. So as I mentioned, in Indian philosophy there are, broadly speaking, two approaches in analyzing the relationship or the lack of it, the absence of it, between cause and effect. According to one broad view, there is an inseparable relationship between cause and effect. And according to another view, there is no relationship at all. Every effect is a new product. It's very crucial, this topic is very crucial in understanding the psychology of parinama or transformation. to make clear how important it is, I shall give a few examples. See, last time I mentioned that our whole mental experience can be analyzed from two angles. One, the experience, the other, a reaction to those experiences. Experience is called bhoga, and reaction to the experiences can be twofold, either positive or negative. We may develop a liking for something, or we may develop an aversion towards something. It could be either way. That means raga, that is attachment, liking, or dvesha, its opposite, aversion. These are two types of reactions to experiences, both external experiences and also internal experiences. Now, these experiences are not short-lived. So experience can be in the form of a flash of ideas, not necessarily action, or it could be in the form of an unconscious thought current, or of course it could be in the form of a deliberate, conscious, willful action. Depending upon the intensity of the will power or the act of will, this action or this event produces, it registers an impression in the mind, and that impression is called vritti, and those vrittis remain in the repository of the mental system called chittam, and they are not easily destroyed. In course of time, these vrittis can become more and more solid, and they can become a samskaras. Samskaras are impressions where a vritti plus a tendency to act in favor of it or its opposite. That's called a samskara. So when we remember an experience, any kind of this bhoga experience, as I mean, bhoga and udvega. Bhoga is experience, udvega are two types of reactions to the experience, either in the form of raga, or I mean liking, attachment, or dvesha, aversion. So when we react to either internal or external experiences, that reaction produces an after effect, which is called a residue. It's called vritti. So Vyasa's commentary compares this vritti to the ripples created when a stone falls on the surface of a lake, for example. The stone may vanish, but then for some time the movements of the water, the ripples, will continue. Now, these become samskaras. And these samskaras are themselves twofold. One set of samskaras may produce identical results in this life itself, and certain samskaras may not produce results in this life. They get accumulated at the lower levels of the mental lake. That's why Vyajaspati says sometimes we, as I mentioned earlier, we feel a mental block, what we call mental block in psychology or psychiatry. We want to do certain things. We have a strong desire. We sincerely, we earnestly try to do certain things. But at the time of trying to do, at that moment, we suddenly feel an aversion towards it. Any number of times we try, we do not succeed. That means a conflict between what we sincerely want to do and what we eventually end up doing. Now, this mental block is rooted in a set of samskaras which are accumulated at the deeper levels of the mental lake. It is called karmashaya. So the point is, this samskaras and impressions and memories accumulated at the lower levels of the mental system, it's called chittam, which become karmashaya, do not produce the result in this life or in our conscious memory. Maybe it could, but of course you have to remember yoga and Vedanta, take it for granted that life is not just one chance, we are born again, that I mentioned earlier, so I need not repeat again. So many of these samskaras bear fruits in the next life. But there are other samskaras which may manifest in this life itself in the form of extreme aversion to certain things and extreme liking, attachment to certain things. So often psychiatrists try to analyze this problem on the basis of experiences and early childhood, I mean all experiences that take place from memory formation days are analyzed by psychiatrists, and they try to analyze this. These are superficial samskaras. But the deeper samskaras which create internal mental block cannot be analyzed with the help of the tools of modern psychology. Now these samskaras again become stronger. Again these samskaras, again, you should remember, samskaras are nothing but vrittis or impressions with a strong tendency to act, either in the positive way or negative way. And samskaras become vasanas. Vasanas are strong action-oriented tendencies. See, you find people are born with some strong vasana for music, painting, in families with generations of painters, musicians, or artists are born. Now, it's many children show that tendency. Not necessarily, of course. And then this vasana, again, eventually becomes nischaya, I mean, a volitional will to act, and you repeat that action again. So this is what is called karma vritti chakram. It is subjected to deeper analysis by Shankaracharya in his Bhashi Vivarana, which is a famous book. One of the Munitrayam of yoga system is Vyasa, Patanjali, Vyasa and Shankara. Means Patanjali Sutras, Vyasa's Bhashya and Shankaracharya's Bhashi Vivarana, means super commentary. It's called Karma Vritti Chakra. Now, As I mentioned here, the parinama, we are talking about parinama. Patanjali gives one clue. Of course, we already explained earlier, yama and niyamas constitute the fundamental disciplines, which help us to neutralize the effect of negative samskaras and vrittis and to produce positive samskaras and vrittis, and thereby actually through deliberate action we can change our character in a way. It is in this context that Patanjali gives one important option, Ishvara Pridhana Dwa. Even if you cannot practice for a long time, yamas and niyamas, ahimsa, satya, steya, brahmacharya, parigraha, shauja, sandosha, tapasvadhyaya, isha, panithana, non-violence, non-stealing, chastity of life, then truthfulness, non-possessiveness, again purity, internal purity, external purity, contentment, reading scriptures, feeding the mind with positive spiritual food by repeating mantras, swadhyaya. And so many other methods are mentioned. Now suppose a person cannot deliberately practice yamas and niyamas for a long time, which are crucial for these three parinamas, that is samadhi parinama, egagrata parinama, and nirodha parinama, which we discussed earlier. Now, even if we cannot fully, perfectly practice yamas and niyamas, if we can surrender ourselves and our action, will, thoughts, words, everything to God or to some supreme spiritual ideal, then that neutralizes the problems of vrittis and vasanas, negative vrittis and vasanas, which remain unrefined because we did not or could not practice yamas and niyamas properly. If you practice yamas and niyamas properly, then they completely neutralize the negative samskaras and purify the positive ones. And slowly, vyasana, pranayama, all these can start. But in case it is not possible for a spiritual seeker, so Patanjali gives an option, which was later commented upon by other commentators, who say, Ishvara Pridhana Dwa. So that's again explained by some of the commentators who are not Buddhist. Vajaspati was a Buddhist, according to some views. And many of the commentators on Yoga Sutras were Buddhists, especially those who belong to the Yogacara, I mean this Vijnanavada tradition. But many of the theistic commentators who commented upon the Ishvara Pridhana Dwa come up with a conclusion. They take this idea from Vaishnava tradition. How, through surrender to a spiritual ideal, we can refine, change vrittis and vasanas and samskaras, negative memories. So normally, you know, this prapatti or isa pridhanam, in a way, in Vaishnava tradition, is defined as anugulyasya sankalpaha pradigulyasya varjanam rakshasya didi vishwasa goptrutta varanam tatha atma nikshepa karpanne sarvidha sharana. This is the Vaishnava philosopher Ramanuja explained this gadyatraya. Now modern Vaishnavite thinkers take two aspects of this surrender, psychology of spiritual surrender. The six elements are mentioned here. I shall explain in English. Always think of positive thoughts, ideas, which are helpful in spiritual life, and avoid negative thought currents. And then have a strong faith that God will protect you or God will guide you. And then God is the only protector. Goptrutta varanam means accepting God as the sole protector. And atma nikshepa karpanne means complete surrender. Now, suppose one cannot practice all this. Many of the modern commentators come up with an idea. For example, is one of the commentators again mentioned, Ramananda Saraswati Yoga Mani Prabha, for example. Sadasivendra Saraswati, who wrote commentaries on Upanishads. So they take these two ideas from Ramanuja system. So anugulyasya sankalpaha pratigulyasya varjana. These are two tools, two fundamental principles of this surrender ideal are taken. That means always think of positive ideas and try to avoid negative ideas. Now, attempt to avoid negative ideas should not be a deliberate effort, because that will make your mind go around negative ideas. So first let me try, I should be very careful about negative ideas. Then immediately mind will go to negative ideas. So I said the old story, a man who was losing his hair went to a doctor, and doctor told him there's only one way out. That is long before modern medical treatments were discovered in Ayurvedic Indian School of Medicine. He said, you should never think of a neck. So that man from that day onwards put up all his effort to avoid thinking of egg, which means he was always thinking of it. He should avoid it, but first of all, he should think of it and then avoid it, which means he lost all his hair. So the Vaishnava philosophers make it a point that pratigulyasya varjanam should not be taken seriously. That means you need not worry about avoiding negative thought currents. You only focus on accepting or contemplating on positive thought currents. This helps us to connect all our actions and thoughts and memories with the God idea. So that's an interesting thing. So every vritti gets affected. Every action, every word is linked to God idea or any spiritual ideal. If you believe, if you are a Buddhist, no, you need not worry about believing in a God. You think of the higher nirvana ideal in Buddhism, for example. That's one way to do that. So you should remember, Patanjali's system is a theistic system, but it is not a theistic system in the same sense in which, the Vaishnava, Shaiva, or Shakta. It is not what you call a God-oriented system, really. It is essentially a quest for internal, mental, spiritual freedom. But then Patanjali says this option is always there. If you can link all your actions, words, and thoughts to God or any great spiritual ideal, then also you can reach the highest level of parinama. Parinama, nirodha parinama, the highest. That's the idea behind. So, in fact, that's why there's a quotation which perhaps I remember. It is from Buddhist scripture, Lankavatara Sutra. It's a famous sutra, it's a famous text on Shunyavada, Buddhist, the doctrine of emptiness, it is called. Most of the Mahayanists, the Tibetan, the Chinese, Japanese, many of them are linked to the Shunyavada tradition. What is Shunya? Shunya is not an absolute nothingness. It is something that's beyond all definitions. Neither existence, non-existence. It cannot be called existence in the empirical sense of the term. As I can say, the San Francisco River or bay or mountains and valleys, these are empirical things. I can't say Shunya is an empirical thing like that. But it cannot be called non-existence, because if it's non-existence, we won't be talking about it. So Buddha, in fact, Buddha's definition is put in Lingavatara. Deshemi sunida nityam shashudo chedavarjidam samsaram supnamayakhyam nacha karma vinashyati akasham ado nirvanam nirodho doyamevava bala kalpan tyakrudan arya nasti astidi varjidah. It is meaning nasti astidi varjidah arya. I mean those who are highly evolved in spiritual life, they believe that absolute reality is not an empirical something, but it is certainly not absolute nothingness. So Now, once we reach this level of contemplation, then also we'll be able to evolve. We will be able to evolve to the stage of Nirodha Parinama. That's what Lingavatara says. Now, we come to the another subject related to this, which is equally related to this. I already mentioned in the last class this mental world, bhoga, udvega. Udvega belongs to udvega is twofold, that is reaction towards positive or reaction opposite, aversion. Now, Patanjali again analyzes the states of mind according to the condition of vrittis, which dominate in the mental system. I mean, how our mind evolves from lower to higher levels of concentration. That is a very famous contribution of Patanjali's system. Patanjali himself did not elaborate, but it was Vyasa who wrote the commentary, who elaborately explained this classification. So according to this classification, our mental conditions can be divided into five states depending upon the dominating vrittis, impressions, memories, samskaras, which dominate the mental system. So the lowest level is kshipta. Kshipta here means it is completely restless, where you cannot focus your mind on anything even for a split second. It is really a kind of abnormal personality. But that idea, so even an abnormal condition is also taken for psychological analysis in Vyasa's commentary and later commentators' works. The restless mind, where you are not able to focus on anything more than for a few seconds. This is a pathological state, not normal state. It could be an extreme form of maybe polarized mind, bipolar system. It may be extremely restless state. The second state is mudha, where the mind is in a state of impasse, where mind is not, it is immersed in tama, means inaction, no awareness, total inability to think and contemplate. So that is the second state. Both these states are beyond the purview of normal psychological analysis. It belongs to abnormal psychology, especially the mudha state and the kshipta state. The third state that's very important, vikshipta state. In vikshipta state, we are able to concentrate on certain things and we are able to achieve great things by concentration, by hard work, by focusing on the details. But we don't have freedom. See, children who are interested in sports or games will be able to concentrate on the game that they're watching in the TV with great concentration. But they don't have freedom. You know, it is not a willful, free act of focusing the mind on something. Rather, it is the mind instinctively flowing towards something. This happens to all human beings. Most of the spiritual seekers belong to this category. They're able to concentrate on some higher ideas for some time. And again, after some time, the mind goes in the opposite direction. So there is no steadiness. It is called vikshipta state. Most of the ordinary human beings belong to that category. The fourth category is egagra state, where you are able to focus on certain ideas of your choice. There is complete freedom and awareness. In the vikshipta state, we are able to concentrate, But there is no freedom. Because if you switch off the TV, the children will get angry. They will be unhappy, those who are interested in sports. So there's no freedom in that. But in the ekagra state, you are able to focus your mental faculties on an object of your choice. What we want to focus on, we are able to focus on. The fifth stage is nirodha state. It is the nirodha state that is the highest state of mental freedom and awareness. It is this fifth state that we have been discussing in these earlier sutras, three kinds of mental transformation. As I mentioned, nirodha parinama, samadhi parinama, and egagrita parinama. As I mentioned, Patanjali's order is somewhat different. Patanjali first talks about egagrita parinama, samadhi parinama. That's what he first focuses on, which is the lowest of the three parinama. Parinama means change. I mean, slowly the mind evolves as a result of constant contemplation and meditation. Mind reaches a higher level of concentration. So what kind of parinama it is, as I mentioned, I already mentioned earlier at the beginning, transformation or change. This parinama should be understood in this context. So at the beginning of the class, I mentioned, you know, there are two approaches in Indian philosophy. One is the idea that every effect is a new creation, new product. It has no relationship with the cause. It's called Arambhavada. I mean, the school which believes that every product, every effect is a new creation. Nayayikas, many of the Buddhist philosophers, Charvakas, all of them, they would tell you that the threads have no connection with the clothes, or the pot has no connection, no relationship with the clay out of which the pot is made. The golden ornament has no connection, no relationship with the gold. So the argument is, if there is any connection, then you don't have to work hard to make a pot out of clay. You can use clay for drinking water. So this is a school, the school of philosophers who believe that every effect is a new creation. Effect has nothing to do with the cause. This we don't accept, of course. Our approach, the Sankhya Yoga approach, is different. The second approach is called Satkaryavada. Satkaryavada means where the karya, the effect, already pre-existing cause. The earlier one was Asatkaryavada, which says that effect does not exist in cause, which Patanjali doesn't accept. Sankhya philosophers do not accept. As I mentioned earlier, Patanjali takes up his metaphysical system from Sankhya's. Now, Patanjali and Kapila, the exponents of yoga system and Sankhya system, they argue that the effect pre-exists in cause. But how does the cause become the effect? There is a difference between Sankhya yoga philosophers and Vedantins. Because Vedantin concept of, it's called Vivarta, will come in the discussion in the coming sutras, especially in the commentaries, when we read Vyasa's commentary. So, according to Patanjali, the effect pre-exists in cause, and the cause becomes the effect. It really becomes the effect. It really transforms itself into effect, like milk becoming curd. Not like the clay becoming pot, no. But milk becoming curd, because curd cannot go back to its milk state. A clay pot, a glass, you break it, it becomes clay. A golden ornament, if you melt it, it becomes gold. So that is not real transformation. That is only apparent transformation. So Patanjali says, when the mind really becomes something different, when it evolves through Nirodha Parinama, it leaves behind all its impurities, vasanas and samskaras. That is Patanjali's system. Which means, parinamo nama vastuno yadharthadaka susuruvam parityajya suruvandram apatihi. But this parinama, according to Patanjali, is mentioned here. Through samadhi parinama and egagrita parinama, when we reach nirodha parinama, as we mentioned earlier, mind becomes totally different. The lower stage, we should remember, is samadhi parinama. The second stage is egagrita parinama. And the third stage, the highest stage, is nirodha parinama. But all the samskaras, vrittis and vasanas become completely transcended. Not they are repressed. We should remember, often, unfortunately, in many of the translations of Yoga Sutras into English, nirodha is very unfortunately, it's almost a tragedy, translated into repression, which is really the worst injustice that we can do to Patanjali and yoga system. It is not repression, it is complete transcendence. Because in transcendence, there is freedom. In repression, there is no freedom, there is slavery. So, we have to remember the earlier sutra that we read and studied in details, you know, the ninth sutra, defines nirodha parinama, vitthana nirodha samskara yohu, abhibhava pradur bhavau, nirodha kshana jitta nyeha nirodha parinamaha. This is the definition of nirodha parinama. Or as the samskaras, vrittis, vasanas, impressions of vitthana state are completely subdued through transcending. The change that the mind undergoes every moment is called nirodha parinama, which means a yogi's mind never goes back to the previous state of spiritual slavery. When you reach freedom, that freedom is real. That is why the parinama, according to Patanjali's system, is the real transformation that should be kept in mind. It is important to remember because, as I mentioned, in the school of philosophers who believe that the effect pre-existent cause, Patanjali systems, yoga system, and Ramanuja system, and many of the Vaishnava philosophers believe in the real transformation, which is called Parinama, Advaitins and Shunyavadins and Buddhist philosophers, especially Shunyavadins, believe in apparent transformation, not real transformation. It is sometimes technically translated into transfiguration, as modern orientologists have tried to invent the term transfiguration. It is called vivarta. So two approaches in this school of Satkaryavada. I mean, among the philosophers who believe that the effect pre-exists in cause, the karya exists in satkarana. Means, like the mound, the huge banyan tree pre-exists in the seed, the mango tree pre-exists in the mango seed, or the pot pre-exists in the clay, or the golden ornaments pre-exist in the gold. Because you melt it, it goes back to gold. But in Vedanta, they do not believe in real transformation. That, of course, we'll discuss in the later part of this particular chapter. They believe only in apparent transformation. Vivarta bhavastu vastunaha susurupa abritya jena suruvandra mithya pratiti. Suruvandrena mithya pratiti. This means. So we will discuss that right now. Now we'll come to the three ideas of parinama or transformation that Patanjali speaks of. It's mentioned in the 13, 14, and 15 sutra. So till now we are discussing three kinds of transformation. Samadhi parinama, first, the lower state, then Egagrita parinama, and the highest is Nirodha parinama. Then Patanjali, again, of course, he goes much deeper than the the traditional Sankhya philosophers and others in explaining the dynamics of Parinama. So he called Dharma Parinama, Lakshana Parinama, and Avastha Parinama. You find in this, in the subsequent sutras, you find, which we are going to take. One is called Dharma Parinama. This happens in Samadhi Parinama. Here, what happens is, the transformation is indicated by changes of dharma. The chitta gives up all its sarvarthada dharma. As we mentioned, the natural state of chitta is sarvarthada. The mind going in all directions. Mind grabbing different objects, trying to understand, trying to comprehend different objects in all directions, without any focus, without any concentration. That's a natural state of mind. Our natural state of mind is, the mind is always being dragged in all directions by the five senses of perception all the time. Sometimes prompted by the five senses of action. This mind is turned inward and turned to the center of concentration. It is called Egagrata Parinama, which happens in the second state, where the mind goes through the same vritti, identical vritti, rising and falling continuously. Most of the great scientists, scholars, philosophers who achieve great things in different areas of specialization are able to do that because they have reached some level of Egagrata Parinama. But remember, you don't call them yogis, because you can call them yogis only if there is freedom. Out of natural interests, a person can take extreme interest, great interest in certain areas of specialization, music, painting, many areas, where some kind of Egagrata Parinama is reached. And in fact, Vyasa himself says, this is also a kind of Parinama, but it cannot be called yoga, because it can be called yoga only if there is freedom. And the third stage is Avastha Parinama, which is called in Nirodha Parinama. So now we will take the next sutra. After finishing this, we will come to the the last sutra that we are going to discuss today. Tasya Prashantavahida Samskarat. So after discussing the three parinamas, that is Samadhi Parinama, Egagrata Parinama, and Nirodha Parinama, in the 10th sutra, Patanjali says, Tasya Prashantavahida Samskarat. By the power, or due to the effect of Nirodha Parinama, where the mind is completely transcended all vrittis and vasanas, this transformation, this effect remains permanent. So what really happens is, at that stage, the mind becomes completely free from samskara. Samskara malam, that is the word used by Vajaspati. Vyutthana samskara mala lehida nirodha parampara matra vahida prashanta vahida. It's a very interesting statement in the Tattva Vaisharadhi's famous book written by Vajaspati that explains the whole dynamics of the 10th sutra. Vyutthana samskara mala lehida nirodha parampara matra vahida prashanta vahida. What happens is, what is mala? What is samskara? What is samskara mala? That's why I need to explain here. As I mentioned earlier, in the conflict between what we want to do and what we are eventually able to do, we already referred to the mental block. There are many things that we want to do. Even suppose we listen to these great scriptures, or when we go to a temple, when we pray, or a church, when we pray, when we listen to some great ideas. And when we compare what we actually do in our daily life, and when we suddenly become acquainted familiar with some great spiritual ideas, we have a strong desire to practice it, to implement it, maybe to start a new life. It happens to many spiritual seekers. And Father Vyasa says this is common for all people whose mind belongs to the Vikshipta state. You know, Vikshipta state, most of the spiritual seekers. We read great books, we meditate, we pray. And also sometimes such sincere spiritual seekers may also do things which may not be conducive or helpful in spiritual life. So mind is divided into two groups, in a pendulum moving from one end of the clock to the other end. This is called Vikshipta state. Now in such a state, when you try to start a new life, or when you try to meditate, for example, tomorrow onwards I won't do certain things, or I would do certain things. I won't do, or I would do. Do's and don'ts. If you take strong decision, we are not able to do that. As I mentioned, the mental block. Mental block is nothing but a manifestation of the samskara mala. Mala means dirt, filth, undesirable things. Things that we want to get rid of, wash off. That is mala. Samskara means the tendencies, impressions that we generated through our actions, our thoughts, our words in the past. So there are many such things in the mental system, which do not cooperate when we try to do something noble, when we try to make a turn to a spiritual life. So it creates a conflict. That samskara mala, that undesirable thing that we want to wash off, to purge off, is completely removed when we reach the state of nirodha parinama. How to do that? The practical stage, many of the commentators say, one very simple method that they always insist is deliberately, consciously, speak and think positive, useful, good things which are helpful in spiritual life. Based on this principle, Patanjali gives the option Ishwar Pranidhanatva, means linking our mind to a spiritual ideal. So that whatever we do, whatever we speak, whatever thoughts we think, will be colored, will be influenced by this higher spiritual idea. That's called Ishwar Pranidhanatva. Somehow linking our actions to God or some spiritual ideal. And how to confront negative thought currents, negative thought ideas? There Patanjali says, of course commentators say, we should not identify ourselves with negative thought currents and ideas. We should not fight them, because fighting also is in a way identification. We should not befriend them. If we befriend undesirable thoughts and ideas, it will be spiritual suicide. If you fight with them, then also mind gets linked to that. So mind should be kept away, completely free from its influence. So upeksha is the term used in Patanjali system. Mudita upeksha. Of course, we already discussed this earlier. Means complete indifference. When undesirable thought currents come, you objectify them. You look upon them as something different from you. Without identifying yourself with those thoughts, just look upon them as something, as you look upon different objects around you. It's not yours. So this indifference is the one method that helps us to reach this level of parinama, transformation. Now we will have interaction for about 5 minutes. So after the long interval, I was trying to recapitulate many of the things that we discussed earlier. So all of you reach Nirodha Parinama. It's a good news. Yeah. You understand? What do you use this system?
Hello?
Yeah, you can hear.
So when you say indifference, I'm just trying to understand what indifference means. I mean, a certain amount of dispassion is probably a good idea, right? Not to get too inflamed. But if there are things that are happening in the world, if there are things happening to my neighbor, to my family that I would object to, maybe are unjust, they may cause suffering, but then how does one rightfully respond to those situations with some amount of indifference or dispassion or some a way of working effectively that might relieve injustice or suffering?
Yeah. No, any good action, any act of philanthropy, or general, any act of generosity or philanthropy, it's very good. But here we are discussing a science of studying our mind. So, how to respond? If by helping our neighbor, if we get peace of mind, a complete satisfaction, that's wonderful. But very often, if our mind is not well trained, helping or working for others' good also, need not necessarily be helpful in spiritual life. You know, so it's not. I don't mean to say that you should be indifferent towards others. The indifference that we mentioned, not towards human beings, towards negative thought currents that may emerge in the mind. See, there is the word indifference, upeksha in Sanskrit. What it means is, suppose you try to meditate or you focus on some great ideal, a negative thought comes, negative ideas comes, which you know very well, it's very harmful to you, not helpful. So you should not violently fight with that thought, because that will also disturb the mind. You should not befriend that thought. That means you will be the loser. So, keeping ourselves indifferent. So, objectify that thought, not subjectify. That's the idea behind. That's the context where the word indifference is used, not in human relations or duties or responsibilities. Here we are discussing the science of inner contemplation, meditation. So if the people who do this kind of meditation, when they help others, they can do much better than others, other ordinary people who don't have this kind of experience. Because very often you help others, but still you don't get a positive response. If the other man whom you help turns ungrateful to you, it may make you sad, it may disappoint you. So you feel discouraged. But if you practice this kind of yoga, you won't be affected by that. That's the greatest philanthropists of the world, where men like Buddha and Jesus and Shankara and Ramakrishna and Gandhi and great men, you know, who continuously worked for others' goods because they had reached the kind of yoga. That's an idea behind. Even the word yoga should not be limited to what is explained in this book. Yoga means lifting the mind to higher universal dimension. That's what it means. That's the idea behind. Anything? Anybody?
Yeah. How is the apparent transformation that you talked about in the Shunyavada different than the apparent transformation that Vedantins believe has happened?
Oh, yeah. Yes. You know, Shunyavadins deny the existence of objective world and also the subject. For them, everything is one entity. Objective world and subjective world. So, the internal appears to have become the external. So, apparent transformation is called vivarta, which is common in Advaita also. In Advaita system, in non-dualistic system, the cosmic reality, Brahman, appears to have become this world. Has not really become, appears to have become. Like that, in Shunya system, Shunyavada, if the internal appears to have become the external. For them, both internal and external belong to the same ontological level of nothingness or voidness. That's the idea behind. It is a technical question. In Shunyavada and Advaita, in both these systems, Vivartha is accepted, but from entirely two different angles. In Advaita, the all-pervading reality, Brahman or Atman, appears to have become this world and these objective entities. In Shunya, the internal reality appears to have become the external. The reality is nothingness. But remember, the Shunya, the word Shunya in Sanskrit literally means voidness or emptiness. But Buddhist philosophers make it very clear that it is not what we mean in English word, English language, nothingness that's meant by Shunya. Shunya is an absolute reality which is beyond definition, description. That's called nastya sthiti varjita. That's a definition. Means you cannot call it as nothing or this or that. You cannot call it either this or its opposite. You cannot call it existence or non-existence. It is neither existence nor non-existence. That's why very often Shunyavada is close to Advaita from one different angle. In Advaita, it is one positive absolute reality which is defined as beyond existence and non-existence. In Shunyavada, it is one positive cosmic nothingness that's defined as neither existence and nor non-existence. To understand Shunya system, I know many of our friends will be new to you. If you are interested in Indian philosophy, in systematic class, we may be happy to do that, you know, Buddhism and all that. Okay.
Can I actually ask a follow-up question?
Yeah.
Who's a philosopher, an Indian philosopher, who's talked about Shunyavada? Because I've read, like, the Heart Sutra and stuff like that from Eastern sources, but is there, I mean, I guess, yeah. Is that geographically? Well, from Chinese sources.
Yeah, yeah.
But are there helpful Indian sources for philosophers for thinking about how that relates to Vedanta?
Yeah. No, okay. You know, when Buddhism traveled to the East, especially the Mahayana system, it took two different forms. Of course, the Vijnanavada and Shunyavada, and this both were parts of Mahayana system, and Indian philosophers, especially Nagarjuna, who wrote Moola Madhyama Karika, it's called Madhyamika Karika or Moola Madhyama Shastram, it is called. And a commentary on that book by Chandragirti. These two constitute the most fundamental books on Shunyavada. Nagarjuna doesn't say that Shunya is one absolute nothingness. But what happened, you know, after Nagarjuna's time, Shunyavada came to be interpreted as absolute nothingness. So today, if you read the books, especially English translations, by Tibetan lamas, because after Tibet was occupied by Chinese, a large number of lamas traveled to America and European countries. So a number of books on Shunyavada were translated to English. So you find voidness, the great void, the great voidness, the great emptiness, that's the word used. So the word emptiness in English is very misleading. It is totally inadequate to express what is meant by Shunya in Sanskrit. I shall read Buddha's own definition of what is Shunya. Of course, it is a Sanskrit verse, but I can translate in English. Deshemi sunida nityam shashuda cheda varjidam samsaram supnamayakim nacha karma vinashyadi. So, I am teaching this sunyata, this emptiness, which is neither eternal nor non-eternal. This world is like a dream. Actions do not perish. And then the absolute reality is nastya sthiti varjita, means neither existence nor non-existence. So shunya is neither existence nor non-existence. Then why it is translated into emptiness in English? That is a problem of translation. And that may explain many of the misunderstandings about Buddhism. Buddhist Shunyavada is one of the greatest philosophical superstructures the world has ever seen. But it has been translated in English as the word empty or emptiness. Maybe for want of a better word. So many of the meditative techniques are built upon this system. If you can withdraw your mind away from anything objective, anything solid, anything material, and you concentrate on nothingness, what you concentrate on is one all-pervading reality, which you call nothing, but you do not really concentrate on nothing really. When you take your mind away from all these empirical phenomena, all that you can think of, define, or explain, and then concentrate on the so-called nothingness, that nothingness is not nothingness. It is one all-pervading reality, which is called shunya in Sanskrit, but when it comes in the form of emptiness in English, you mean this glass is empty, mean there is nothing. It's not that. So it's a problem of translation. Shunya, the shunya doesn't really mean what the word, English word, nothing or nothingness means in English language. Or empty or emptiness. Often you find translation, empty, the voidness, the great void, the great emptiness. Like that. So that's a problem of translation. But many Buddhist scholars and philosophers emphasize this point. It is not what we normally mean by the English word nothingness that is implied. No. According to Indian philosophers, for information, they say what non-dualists call one all-pervading absolute reality, Buddhists call one all-pervading absolute nothingness. It's a problem of language. That's what Indian philosophers assert. Indian philosophers mean there are hundreds of books written in Sanskrit language, written, and many of these books were later taken into the Central Asian Eastern countries and translated. Of course, Kumara Jiva is one of the great writers who actually came from China and who took about 1,300 books on Shunyavada and translated into Chinese, one of them. There are quite a few. So their writings give a different picture. They do not depict the absolute reality as one all-pervading nothingness. Okay. So I'm happy that some of you are interested in Indian philosophy and in philosophical systems. It's good. it's more of a, those who are interested.
Swamiji, one question. So did Buddha also talked about Sunyavada, or Sunyavada came after Buddha?
Oh, yeah. Okay. See, now remember, Buddha passed away in 480. He was born in 560 and passed away in 480. There are 2-3 dates among historians. Difference of opinion. These 4 schools of Buddhism, Shunyavada, Vijnanavada, and Sautrantika and Vaibhashika, these 4 schools of Buddhism emerged from 3rd century BC onwards. That means almost 200 years after Buddha's passing away. When Buddha passed away, these systems of philosophy had not evolved at all. What was left was his teachings, which he preached in Prakrit language, which after maybe around 100 years after Buddha's passing away, in the first Buddhist council, according to some scholars, was held in Rajagriha, near Bihar, today's Bihar. And the second Buddhist council that held in Ceylon, many of the great Buddhist monks, they remembered the great teachings of Buddha, and they wrote down in Pali script, which came to be known as the three baskets of Buddhists called Tripitakas. Suttapitaka, Vinayapitaka, Abhidhammapitaka. Today when you go to our bookstore, you find Dhammapada, this famous book. Dhammapada is taken from Suttapitaka, from the 26th chapter of the Khuddaka Nikaya. It's called. So you find in, if I can get Dhammapada, which very similar and which very similar to the Upanishads and the Bhagavad Gita, many of the teachings. So Shunyavada was unheard of when Buddha was born. The exponent of Shunyavada was Nagarjuna, who lived in the 4th or 5th century AD. That means almost 800 years after Buddha's passing away. And the famous book is Moola Madhyamika Shastra, Madhyamika Karika, which was the commentary by Chandragirti. So, that you have to remember, the great philosophical systems which became so prominent in Buddhist tradition were all post-Buddha, belong to post-Buddha period. Buddha did not really expound any system. His teachings were limited to this. Chattvari, Arya Satyani, four noble truths and eight noble paths, which you can practice. If you want to become a good human being, if you want to become a real spiritual person, this is enough. But people want something solid, you know, so philosophies evolved late. That's all I think. Okay. So thank you. So we'll discuss later in the next class. Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Tat Sat Sri Ramakrishna Paramahamsa.